A fable. Universalism and partition were neighbors, though never good friends. Universalism would go about its business without bothering to itemize personal interactions or economic bills. A woman was not assumed to be a woman because she wore a skirt, and a man was not understood to be a man because he wore his hair short. Universalism assumed universally that while differences existed, no one particular could ever fully define a person or an issue. Partition would follow universalism closely, and wherever it spied an opportunity to make a windfall, political, monetary, emotional, it would move in for the kill. Working on people's particularities, partition used those to the advantage of some and the disadvantage of others. Not content with making gains in universalism's wake, partition decided to ratchet up the implications of its logic and urged people and ideas and desires to declare independence from one another. Partition set itself up in opposition to universalism. What universalism traversed with indifference, partition pinned down with identity.
Twentieth century history. India, the brightest jewel.
This is India, its mountains and great plains bound together by a net of steel, the railways built during British rule. The British built canals too, to water the land. They opened up the wilderness, transforming it into tea gardens and plantations. The British had been in India as rulers for nearly 200 years, building splendid palaces and monuments all over this vast country.
It's August 1947, and a fire is raging in Delhi. Much else is unfolding. Indian independence, the birth of Pakistan, partition. This fire isn't engulfing mosques or temples, nor does it affect village homes or commercial bazaars. It isn't the doing of mob rule, mob violence, communal riots, or Hindu-Muslim riots. Although these official terms likely littered the many pages now curling up in flames. The bonfire of documents is so big that smoke hangs over the city for days. Evidence of 200 years of colonial rule is burning.
Against the continuing background of Hindu and Muslim riots, the plan for dividing India was hammered out. Mountbatten realized that his power to control the events by force was running out, so he advanced the date of independence to August 1947. In June, the plan was accepted at last by all the Indian leaders. Everyone had had to make a compromise. spurred on by Mountbatten's skill and charm.
My opinion, that man provides the best...
On the 14th of August at Karachi, the Mountbattens attended the inauguration of the Dominion of Pakistan.
I'm speaking to you today as your viceroy. Tomorrow, the government of the...
Jinnah was the governor general. Muslims now had their homeland, West and East Pakistan. The Mountbattens then returned to India. At Delhi on the 15th of August, Mountbatten was sworn in as the first governor general.
I will well and truly serve His Majesty King George VI in the office of governor general of India.
Nehru was then sworn in as Prime Minister. At last, Nehru had achieved what he and other Congress leaders had struggled for so long, independence. But behind the celebrations lay the problems of a violent partition in the Punjab and Bengal, which was to cost 500,000 lives. For those lucky enough to escape the killing, it meant painful journeys from one part of the country to the other. Muslims leaving India and Hindus fleeing from Pakistan. 1948 was to be the year of the refugee. It was perhaps ironic that the railways, which had helped to unite British India, now carried its people apart.
Operation Legacy was a British colonial office, later Foreign Office programme, to destroy and hide files from 23 former colonies. Officials were keen to avoid a repeat of the spectacle caused by the bonfire in Delhi in 1947. The operation ran from the 1950s until the 70s, when the decolonisation of the empire was at its height. Incinerators were now favoured over open flames. This ongoing historical silencing is a performance of power, against which speech is a deceptive counterpoint. The colonial ordering of time, in the case of partition, is now represented by its sonic materiality. What remains after the destruction of archives of the powerful are voices. According to Nikita Dhawan, hegemonic norms of recognition determine what can be read, heard, and understood as legible. She asks, if discursive violence is inevitable, why not give preference to silence over discourse? Why should one not avoid speaking?
People of Karachi, like especially Mahajirs and migrants, how we remember Karachi is really fondly as the city that just welcomed all refugees and all migrants with open arms. And when you think about partition violence, you always think of elsewhere. So you think of Punjab and you think of Bengal, but you never think of Karachi and Sindh as being implicated in violence. And it's always imagined that the Hindus here left because they wanted to leave, but not because they were forced to leave. And so basically on this site is where the largest Sikh and Hindu massacre happens during the partition. And I think on 6 January 1948, about 200 people are murdered here. And kind of the story of it goes that in around that time, okay, thank you. So in and around that time, what was happening was that already a lot of Sindhi Hindus are and Sikhs are wanting to leave. Because in villages and in kind of rural parts of Sindh, there's already a lot of unrest and people aren't feeling safe anymore. But up until then, the city had been more or less safe. But as more and more Muslims from Punjab are coming, they have just witnessed violence on their ends, and so they come with a lot of hatred towards Hindus and Sikhs because they've seen their women be raped and killed. And so this neighborhood, by 1948 in January, a lot of Sindhi Hindus have already left, and a lot of migrants, Muslim migrants, have already come in and started living around. And so in January 6, 1948, there's a whole troop of about 200 Sikhs who are gathered at the railway station, and the police feels that at the railway station they're already attracting a lot of Assalamualaikum. Kaise hain aap? Bahut lamba hissa ho gaya hai, aap kaise hain? ये मेरे दोस्त बाहर से आए हुए हैं, तो उनको मैं काफ़ी अच्छे बात थे यहाँ पे,
इतने अच्छे बात आई, मैं याद कर रहा था आपको, मैं कहीं बाहर निकल गई हूँ।
थाईलैंड से आई है मेरी दोस्त और ये पोर्चुगल से आए हैं, तो मैंने कहा कि इस जगह की विजिट करा। नहीं नहीं थैंक यू, बहुत
शुक्रिया।
हाँ
बता दे क्या तुम्हें?
नहीं नहीं बहुत बहुत शुक्रिया।
बगल ऊपर ही फ्रेंड बोला है, तो फ्रेंड का रिश्ता भी।
नहीं ऐसी कोई बात नहीं, थैंक यू। आप भी फिर इनको थोड़ी देर बाद कुछ बताइएगा इस जगह के बारे में।
क्या
बताएं जी? मैं आपसे पूछूंगी फिर, हम एक विजिट कर लें।
हाँ कर लें। बारिश हुई ना, हवा चली तो सारी दीवारें वाले गिर गई।
हाँ मैंने देखा कि ये तो बहुत
बारिश हुई, इतनी तेज हवा चली।
In the summer, because of the rain, all of the walls have fallen down. So this was actually a lot more built.
Okay.
When I come last.
So it's collapsing very fast.
Yeah. So yeah, sorry. Anyway, so in on 6 January 1948, there's a group of 200 Sikhs are waiting on the railway station, and the police is getting a bit worried because they can see it's causing a lot of tension among the Muslims. And so they advise the Hindu and Sikh troop that why don't you go to the Ratan Talaa, this was known as the Ratan Talaa Gurdwara, why don't, and it had become a kind of refugee site, and so why don't you go there, spend your time there, when it's time for your ship to leave the port, we'll come and escort you to the port, so why don't you just go and stay there, you'll be safer there. And so these 200 people come on donkey carts from, I guess, the city station all the way to here. They attract a lot of attention on the way. And by the time they reach here, already a lot of, specifically Punjabi Muslims, have started to accumulate here, and they're giving these people threatening looks. And so these people go in and they lock the door of the Gurdwara. And what the kind of, so many of the stories around partition violence is always that it's the spaces of worship that protect people. And so because Guru Nanak was protecting the space, when the Punjabi Muslims tried to break in, the door wouldn't open. And so the space really managed to protect these 200 people who are inside. And by this point, right, all of these Muslims who came from India are called Mahajirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had all collected with weapons and knives and various kinds of equipment, and were sort of, a mob had already collected. And I guess actually mob is a pretty terrible word to use to describe partition violence, because it kind of, this was a lot also about property. It was about wanting to scare Hindus and Sikhs to leave this place so that the Muhajirs and the migrants who are coming would have land to take over, because otherwise there was no room for them in the city. So there is often economic ulterior motives to these kind of so-called mob gatherings.
Decolonization didn't just result in the movement of people. The so-called migrated archives of the UK's unburnt documents were transported to a facility 6 miles north of London, where they remain, if they exist at all. The marking DG on some of the papers was said to be an abbreviation for Deputy Governor, but it in fact was a protective code to indicate that they were for the eyes of British officers of European descent only, meaning white British officers. These papers are still not fully released. Some suspect that material relating to the partitioning of Africa is also hiding in the vaults of Hanslope Park. In London's Trafalgar Square, a monument to Major General Sir Henry Havelock commemorates his bravery during the campaign in India, 1857. In essence, it was the first widespread struggle of resistance against the British, and involved Indians of all faiths and classes. After the resistance failed, the colonial administration enshrined in law a brutal regime of punishment, separating religious and ethnic groups from each other, ingraining new stereotypes of race and religion for good. Today, some of these laws are still used to quash dissent in India and Pakistan, particularly protests. Havelock's statue, easily overlooked due to its proximity to the more prominent Nelson's Column, is a strong signifier of public memory. It has embedded within it a conflicting and complex interplay of partition effects that stretch forward as well as backwards in time.
How old were you?
I was about six years old.
Six? You trust your memories?
Yes, yes. And the other thing I remember, I can never forget in my life, that the person who sell bangles was very huge. We called him Palwan. He was a bangle seller. Then we used to live on the main DT road. If we stand in our gallery, then we can see the road below. One evening, there was a riotous. And his throat was half cut. He was just like this, on a rickshaw.
And you saw this?
Yes. This is a scene that no one can forget in life.
Did you see any British police, soldiers, people?
No, they are all the Indian soldiers. The Indian police and Indian. They, first of all, they disarmed the Muslims. We were not even allowed to keep a knife.
And then how did you leave? You had to leave your house, huh?
Yes, we used to leave our house whenever there was a procession of six. And one day, your mommy and myself and a blind woman, very old blind woman, we were in the house alone, and the six came. They were about a dozen six, all the swords without a scabbard. But there were other Muslims, and one of the person, he just jumped from the gallery on the road, saying Allah. Then other people also came out, and six ran away. Yes, they went.
So, how many days were you in the house?
At least four days a week. That was the period. In the early 1947 or 48, if they find any Muslim in the train, they used to throw him out of the gate or window. This was the position. And nobody will buy your property. They used to say that if a property is valued at that time there were only thousands. So they would say, you know, we will give you few hundred rupees. If you want to take it, then take it. Otherwise you will go to Pakistan and be mourned. We will get it for free.
One who can be silent is in a position to listen. And one who listens gives oneself over to the silences and discourses. The elusive as well as the ordered silences. The silences that are subject to our will and those that govern our language, our being. If we draw a line around partition, a limit case, itself the product of religious geographical lines crudely drawn, then we refute its connections to anything outside of the eventness that we've laid an onto it. What does listening to private memories of the event, transformed into public memory, mean for the production and maintenance of partition as a life world? And what does it mean for the ethics of such production? What evidence do we need after we know that some evidence has been destroyed? How benign was the end of colonialism really? How do we understand historical acts of abandonment? And what protocols do we need to listen to these silences?
And so they tried breaking the door open and the door just doesn't open. And so the people inside feel that, okay, we've been saved. But what the Mahajirs do, so around that time, there used to be a building right next to this. And so they got onto the roof of the building and they threw lit coal onto the Gurdwaras. And the Gurdwaras' roof was made of wood. And so when they threw this burning material, the roof got on fire and people were suffocating inside, they were burning. And so from inside, they had to open the door and come out, running out. And as soon as they came out, there was by now a group of like up to 500 people. Some testimonies say up to 1,000 people had already gathered here to massacre these people. The police takes a good half an hour to arrive, according to official records. The police is also really inefficient, really slow. And they only get here with 20 policemen, but by this point, hundreds of people have accumulated. The policemen manage to rescue some of the non-Muslim families, put them into their trucks, but the Mahajirs and the migrants overtake and refuse the trucks to go because they have so much strength in numbers. And so they get on the truck, they drag back all of the families out, and every single person is pretty much killed. From here, the protest spreads all over the city. So over the next 3 days, all spaces of worship are attacked. All areas where Hindus live are attacked, women are raped, children are murdered, people are kidnapped. There's complete mayhem in the city, and it takes the government 3 days to finally impose a curfew. And so there's also the state is so complicit in allowing this kind of violence to go unchecked. And that again, that not they didn't see the Muslim and Hindu as equal citizens, but clearly were prioritizing one over the other. And so, this kind of in this the memory of Sindhi Hindus who are now settled in India, this event is really sort of really vivid and really an important marker for what causes a lot of families who up until now had not considered to move to then move to India. And kind of actually ended up interviewing this one man on Skype who used to live around here before, around 1948. Mm-hmm. So like what's nice about partition also is that you had these stories of really intense violence, but then you also had these stories of intercommunal harmony and people coming to
solidarity,
to help each other. Yeah, so this one old man that I spoke to over Skype had this like really sweet story of how a Muslim family in this time actually saves him.
So it went until a time when partition convinced the people in its thrall to pretend to live with more finality and absoluteness than they actually did. When a sufficient number agreed to this game, partition decided to carve up the world. Armed with geopolitical and ontological victories, partition worked to give the very idea of universalism a bad name. And so it came to pass that partition ruled the very real pretend world in which money and power and advantage and disadvantage were carved up oppositionally into ever smaller parcels. Universalism continued to describe a reality in which people are not identities, but its insight was ignored. And so they lived unhappily ever after.